a connection. I agree with you that when you decide which data gets into the cache and also how to maintain consistency across the layers, I see connection to the data movement section. Because maybe the lead, I guess when you decide what goes into cache, what does not go into cache, right? And whatever that's not going into cache will be actually moved to the next layer of the hierarchy. So yeah. That involves data movement. And data staging.
Since the price implicit, I think device is a good time to talk about the big picture here.
Yeah, I think that would be very useful because I'm kind of struggling to see how the two pieces will work together. In fact, I'm even struggling to see how data movement would work across cache hierarchies, just because it is not clear in my mind how the cache hierarchy should be designed in the first place. So one thing which I do know, I mean, here are the things that I think are true. For instance, it is expected that each node will have a local cache of some kind, consisting of NVM / SSD / both or all of the above. And then you will have somewhere in the HPC compute cluster access to a shared burst buffer, and there may be one or more such burst buffers, and it's not entirely clear how those burst buffers should be architected or practically done for given the limitations or restrictions of the HPC cluster environment. And then you have potentially an additional buffer or cache layer at the IO nodes, and it's not yet clear to me if the IO nodes in this new environment survive in their current form, because there is talk in the DOE report about changing the parallel file system usage entirely. And then, of course, there may be caching going on at the parallel file system layer if it does continue to exist in its current form. So there are all these question marks that I have in my mind, which I'm trying to get some clarity on before I start writing stuff that is better integrated with the rest of the things we are proposing. And so I'm hoping to have that conversation today so that I can actually do some writing.
Okay, we lost good portions of that with you dropping out, unfortunately.
Did I lose you?
Yeah. We dropped out a couple of times there.
Just a couple of times, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But I got the gist of the asking. I'm going to make most of the questions so we can discuss them one by one.
Okay, let me... tell me if you lose me, okay?
Yeah.
So that I don't keep going.
Because I can hear you for like a couple of seconds.
I can hear you perfectly well, by the way.
Hello, Raju.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You know what's happening? I think
we just lost you again.
Okay, I think I know what's happening. It's because my department internet connection is also, I'm also connected on Skype on two machines now.
Okay.
That's probably it. Okay, so now I switched off the other one. Hopefully you don't lose me anymore. Okay, so what I'm saying is that I think I need a little bit more clarity about the kind of caching / buffering, burst buffering architecture that we can assume for this future system, and that's something reasonable to assume given all the various components that we are proposing and how everything fits up in this new architecture. And I was just saying that you have caches at all these different layers, starting from compute to burst buffers to IO node caches to caches at the PFS at the parallel file system layer. So for instance, how are these caches set up. For instance, is the burst buffer there? And if it's there, is it distributed or centralized? And do the caches of the IO nodes exist? And if yes, then what kind of caches are we talking about? Or what can we assume to be reasonable? And if the caches exist at the parallel file system, can you know what kind of caches are reasonable there? That sort of stuff. I think, and the connectivity as well to these caches between the compute nodes and, say, for instance, the burst buffers.
Can I reframe this slightly?
Yeah.
The way that I would think about that is more if we have NVM available in these different locations, how can we effectively use it as a cache?
Right, but even before that, I think a question preceding what you just said is, can we assume that caches existed at each of these layers? And if so, how would they be realized? To make
right.
a specific, concrete question, the burst buffer, we talked about sharing across the entire cluster and potentially across multiple applications. Is that
right,
a realistic assumption? And if so,
well,
how fat a pipe needs to go into that single shared burst buffer?
Right.
That's all.
Right. So for the machine that's going to Oak Ridge, the new IBM machine, they'll have an SSD on every node, basically on the disk bus, the SATA bus.
Okay.
For the new machine that's going to go at Los Alamos, for Los Alamos and Sandia, the Cray machine, there are separate nodes within the compute area that have nothing but SSDs in them. And then there's a software interface to access them.
Mm-hmm.
But they are outside of the I/O path. And so both of those models will exist within the next year and a half. And
Could a hybrid model also exist?
Well, and that's the current process we're going through at Sandia is to specify the next machine. And the thing that we are all talking about internally is that we really want a hybrid model. And I've been telling every vendor that's come and given us a, we're going to put it here, description. I said, no, the reality is we want a little bit of it everywhere. And, for example, it may make more sense, instead of having the 800 gig SSD on every node, to have, like the Oak Ridge machine, but to have a 256 gig on every node, and then a separate 256 gig space that is on and elsewhere in the compute area. And then we'll actually get more use out of it and a more productive machine.
Hmm.
So those are the things that I'm thinking that we'll be able to explore in this proposal is to look at what are kind of the minimums that we really want for different purposes, and what do we think we can effectively take advantage of, and then use that as a way for the machine designers to say, well, we know our workloads look like this. Based off of that and our limited budget, where should we spend our money for this non-volatile memory? Should it be on the nodes? Should it be in the compute area? Should it be burst buffers? Should it be on the I/O nodes or in the parallel file system, or what mix? And that's kind of where I was pushing things on this, is that, and then each of these projects give us the opportunity to look at a different aspect of it.
Right. I think
if you look at the architectural diagram and the proposal, I think those places Jay mentioned, they're there. So they are possibilities. And I think that's also the spirit of the proposal, is that people don't really know. They don't know.
The
place and the model AVMs, how to use them.
You're talking about figure one, right? You're talking about figure one?
Yeah.
The shared burst buffer doesn't exist in figure one.
What? Sorry?
The shared burst buffer.
Right, so the burst buffer depends on what you call the burst buffer.
Right.
So some people think the burst buffers are the AVMs and the IO nodes. So they're there. But according to Jay, the machine that they have now, which they call as burst buffer, is actually in the separate nodes in the computer area.
Yeah.
There are those boxes with in transit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the one thing that we all agree about in looking at this next generation platform we're in the process of specifying, because the request for proposal for that's going to go out in January. But the one thing we all agree on is that either on that machine or the one after it, we're going to have non-volatile memory pretty much everywhere. And it's just a matter of finding out what's the right balance and how much can we afford.
Mm-hmm. So going back to the, I just want to be a little bit more clear on the burst buffer question. In the burst, if let's say there was a separate burst buffer that we needed to add to figure one, where would you stick that in?
The non-volatile memory on the IO forwarding layer, that to me really is the burst buffer.
Okay. Okay, so that...
That's the second big change about...
Yeah, the IO nodes.
Yeah, FIO the box.
Yeah, the boxes on the bottom of the compute nodes that just say in transit, those are the ones that would be separate in compute area nodes that are nothing but SSDs.
So this is...
And
like,
then, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What I would then take from that is that somehow the burst buffer is distributed across all the IO nodes, and we may potentially just use each burst buffer for the accesses that go through a specific IO node, as opposed to the burst buffer being shared across all the applications.
Right. The purpose of the burst buffer is to give you cached access to the file system rather than more advanced data operations. The more advanced data operations, such as a data rearrangement or filtering or something else like that, that's where you'd use the in-transit nodes, because you don't want to slow down the path to the parallel file system. But you need a lot of storage, so you don't want to... take a very large portion of the machine to do this very communication-intensive task.
One quick question here. One IO node serves one application or more than one? It could serve more than one.
There's a certain number of IO nodes that determine the bandwidth between the compute area and the parallel file system. But all of the IO nodes can be accessed from any compute node.
Okay, so IO nodes are basically potentially shared across applications.
Absolutely.
And therefore,
yes.
The caching is also potentially shared across applications. So Ming, some of the work that you did on coordinated access across multiple parallel file system nodes, you know, some of those techniques would apply here as well, right?
Yes.
If you want to...
I talk about them in my talk. So just to follow up on your question, I think each IO node is assigned to a set of compute nodes, right? So
No, it's not. It's just a pool of nodes that the compute nodes can use to access the parallel file system.
Okay. It's more dynamic.
Right. They're in the current interconnects, it's somewhat statically assigned just based off of routing.
Okay.
But particularly in the next generation networks, it's all going to be dynamically routed based off of current traffic conditions.
That's great.
Yeah, so it very much is an all-to-all kind of potential.
I see. Okay.
So I think then
given that the IO nodes are much more easily shared, the NVM on the IO nodes are more easily shared by the applications... Then one key question that I see, and I do bring it up in the QoS specific task, is how do these caches get divided across the different applications that may be running? Is that a reasonable question to ask?
That's a very reasonable question to ask.
Okay.
That's one that we do not know an answer for yet. There's still a lot of, because we don't have it as pervasive as we would like in these machines yet, that's one of the questions that we want to investigate for like the the new machine, the Trinity machine at Los Alamos and Sandia, is given that we have this separate set of nodes that we're going to be treating like a cache or the file system, how do we share that effectively? Because we really don't know.
Hmm. Right. And then there is interplay because of caches at different layers. From an application performance standpoint, I mean, just because we gave an application a little bit more cache at the I/O node doesn't mean that the application performance would improve, or vice versa, because you have caches at other layers as well. And the caches at the compute nodes, of course, are dedicated for the application. We could think of it as being a shared distributed cache, but that would complicate matters quite a bit. And I don't know if we should be going in that direction at all.
It's actually a little different from that, I think. The way that people envision the I/O nodes to be used is that they will take the output from the compute nodes and absorb it as fast as they can, writing to the non-volatile memory just to be able to hold it all. And then it will trickle it out to the parallel file system as fast as it can. But there's a big performance mismatch, a bandwidth mismatch between the compute nodes and the parallel file system. So that's the real focus that people have when they say burst buffers. They want to fix that bandwidth mismatch.
Hmm.
The non-volatile memory on the local nodes, we really don't want to use for that same purpose, because there are communication patterns between the nodes for the simulations that requires a lot of bandwidth between the nodes just to do data exchanges. And the work we've done previously has shown that if we try to move data at the same time that other communication is occurring, we can dramatically slow down the application.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why having that separate burst buffer area just to fix that bandwidth mismatch with the parallel file system was a desirable hardware layer to add.
Mm.
And that's why we would also want that separate in compute area storage, so we have a place to stuff data that we need to do some big data rearrangement or data selection or data sharing on that never needs to go to the parallel file system. That way we don't mess up that performance or get mixed up in that. Because if we're doing a big data rearrangement operation, that's going to completely consume all of the IOPS for the non-volatile memory.
Hmm.
And then you'll have no parallel file system performance. And that's just not an acceptable situation.
Right.
So that's the balance that we're trying to figure out how to manage.
Hmm. I think we can assume
every NVM layer in the hierarchy is a distributed cache.
No, I think that Jay is saying that the compute node NVM should not be assumed to be a distributed cache.
Well, they are used for
staging,
right? They are used for staging the data between between the application's compute nodes and the in-transit processing
computer. No, I would actually use the on-compute node where we have the applications for maybe just something like checkpoint restart, where you checkpoint to your neighbor.
Right.
And that way, if you fail, we can restart that one while everybody else just waits and then have it catch up and then continue.
Okay.
And that's what the scalable checkpoint restart paper essentially did, is it said, okay, let's just swap with neighbors, then every so many of them we're going to write out to the parallel file system because we want to just be extra secure.
Okay, so the node local NVM is used for checkpoint for neighbors.
That is so far is what we've seen is the best use, either
okay.
that or some out-of-core computation.
Okay.
Like if you're going to be doing a big genomic search
mm.
and you have that petabyte-sized data set that you need to compare
right.
against,
right.
you're going to partition that across all of these nodes and stuff
right.
it all in the non-volatile memory and pull into memory the pieces of it that you care about
right.
and work on it that way. So in that case, it probably won't be used for checkpoint restart. But that's still a node local or node
yeah.
neighbor kind of purpose.
For staging the input for big data application.
Right.
And the computer area NVMs, they are used for data staging between composite applications.
Right, right.
So the reason I say it's a distributed because I guess conceptually every layer includes distributed NVMs that are
right.
that are hosted on different nodes.
Right.
in my mind, distributed means that applications across different nodes can share the caches of other nodes.
Not necessary. If you look at for example, we did caching for MapReduce. Well, on every single node, the cache is now shared by different applications. But across the whole system, the layer is shared. And then you can, if you look at the total capacity of all the caches, and consider that as a single pool, then the cache allocation becomes every node, how much cache you give to each application individual time. So that's what I'm saying. So globally it's still shared, but locally it may or may not be shared. And if you look at, for example, if you look at the compute area NVM, right? So those nodes that are dedicated to SSDs, so they can be allocated to different applications.
Mm. Yeah, so yeah. I'm just looking at the picture here and looking at the compute nodes where you're running the application, not the in-transit ones, where you have the application and you have an in-situ analysis,
right,
potentially co-located in-situ, and there you have the NVM that is being used only by the specific application that's running on that node, and it's not being run by applications that are run on a different node, right? Or other application. Even the same application being run on a different node doesn't get to use this NVM, except maybe for checkpoint exchange, as we discussed earlier.
Right. As long as you're in the same application set of nodes, that's something you probably want to allow. And this is where Kevin's whole security thing would be something worth investigating here, is trying to figure out how to get your granularity and your permissions in a way that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm just thinking here. So does it make sense for an application? Most of these applications are very homogeneous, right? I mean, each node pretty much does the same thing as every other node. And
in large part, yeah.
In most part. And for those applications, you do not, you know, the complexity of sharing an NVM across nodes probably is not very beneficial. Except maybe to do this checkpoint exchange kind of optimization.
Right.
For the scalable checkpoint restart. But using other NVMs to store copies of your local checkpoints, is instead of storing it locally yourself, I think that may not be necessary for such homogeneous applications.
I think that's only true for the node local NVMs.
Yeah, I'm talking only about
yeah.
the node local in the compute node.
Yeah,
right.
So, but for the compute area NVM, right, those boxes in the bottom, they can be shared.
Right.
So they are exclusively for staging data between applications, and so how much data can be staged will decide the performance of application. And there's only a limited set of those kind of models, and they need to be allocated somehow.
So just
right.
To
there may be a bandwidth allocation, or there may be a total capacity kind of allocation. That's
right.
Something else to consider. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Just to clarify here, the in-transit compute nodes are doing in-transit jobs for only a single application, right? Or
well, that's debatable.
Uh-huh.
In the simplest case, absolutely. In the ideal case, probably not. They'll probably be running different things on different portions of the data. Just because the level of sharing that we're going to need to have on these, it would probably be too large, too much sharing required to be able to afford to do that.
I see. So you're saying that the same data is being munched on by many in-transit processing applications?
No, the node and the non-volatile memory will be partitioned.
Hmm.
And part of it will be used for one application and another part for a completely separate independent application.
Mm-hmm. So there is a partitioning requirement there as well for the NVM.
Right.
Besides the partitioning requirements at the requirement at the IO nodes.
So right. are you suggesting that maybe multiple intransitive applications are working on the same data, of course, on the same data set, different partitions of the same data?
Probably. That's possible. We have a case where we demonstrate that kind of thing, but that's not a common case.
Okay.
It would be more common that it would be that because you have multiple applications wanting to do data staging,
yeah.
If you have n in-transit nodes and you have n plus one applications,
right.
Somebody's got to share or somebody's not getting any service.
Right.
And it may be that we show that, okay, somebody not getting service is actually the better solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so I mean, just to rephrase, you're saying that the in-transit nodes, compute nodes, may be hosting multiple in-transit applications that are munching on data from multiple applications in the first place, right? So the NVM
yes.
there would need to be shared across all of these different in-transit applications.
Correct.
Okay.
And then, Roger, so then in the lower layers, the NVMs and the LLOs are shared.
Yes.
And, especially given what JJ said, the new machine, the LLOs is totally configurable. And then on the story nodes, the NVMs are also shared. Like, they just typical processing buffer.
Yeah.
So all these lower layers just have a management problem.
So currently,
yeah.
The communication between the app and the in-transit processing app, is that through the parallel file system or is it a different way?
It's completely separate.
It's a completely separate way. Okay, so
right.
Checkpoints are funneled to the in-transit applications as well as to the parallel file system.
The checkpoints would be done through a... probably just using the same communication infrastructure that the application already uses and then swapped among those nodes. And then when they want to connect between components in a decomposed application or in a workflow, they'll want to push that to the in-transit nodes. But in neither case do they want to be writing to something that will go to the parallel file system directly.
Mm-hmm. So there is a human in the loop that will schedule the data movement between the app and the in-transit version of the app or in-transit processing mechanism for the app.
It's part of the application's normal processing. It says at this time step I'm going to push out,
mm-hmm.
and then there'll be something else that will be essentially waiting for notification that new data is available for it to process.
I see.
I suppose JSP's some data movement will take up how to optimize this whole process.
Right.
And make sure that data get to the right place at the right time.
Right. Yeah, and for the Oak Ridge machine, because they don't have the in-transit nodes and everything's on the application nodes, all of that will end up having to be merged. So it's a different kind of problem that will be interesting.
Yes. What do you mean that all have to be merged?
Because they don't have separate nodes with the non-volatile memory. All of the compute nodes have non-volatile memory on them, but there's not any separate ones.
Okay.
Because of that, those non-volatile memory devices are going to be used for checkpointing, for staging, and as burst buffers for the file system. And IBM very proudly said that they don't disturb the CPU when accessing the SSD, but they do disturb the network card, the network card, the memory bus, and the SSD. So that is potentially a pretty significant impact on the applications, and that's really what motivates us to want that separate in-transit area, is that if we have this big data set that somebody else needs to grab, we want to get it out of our way and then let us continue our communication intensive job without having to fight with somebody else trying to use that same device and that same network card.
Right. So from a caching perspective, we have data that's residing in the app, the primary app node, the in-transit node. Maybe that's not a caching layer, but it's just a staging layer of some kind. But you have this the same data, not buffering. I think it's just staging and then throw away, right?
Staging, yeah.
The in-transit stuff.
It's probably throw away, but there may be a matter of you say, okay, now this was a data set I really care about the raw data on. Now I need to get this to disk.
Hmm. You mean after the processing?
Right. Hmm. You may discover that that was an important data set that you didn't realize it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. So you would push it through the panel to the file system.
Right. And how to do that other than running another program or having some other mechanism that says, oh, take that data that's identified in this way and stuff it over here in the file system now. Because the other piece that people have been thinking a lot about is the potential of using a key value store kind of interface for the in-transit nodes.
Hmm. I see. So just to give a little bit of background on the and the soft PM containers that we work with, they are, you know, they support what the incremental checkpointing of memory data, right? And the checkpoints are done at the increments are done at the granularity of an operating system page, which is
right.
The conventional copy on write style. So when you have when you generate a new checkpoint, it's not a complete checkpoint because it's just an increment over some previous checkpoint. So I'm just wondering here if we do one of the things that I do understand is that not all checkpoints make it to the file system, only a fraction of them do. One of the challenges here would be to ensure that whatever goes to the parallel file system is actually complete, right?
Right.
Because you have
The other piece that goes with that is to use it for beyond checkpoint and also for your actual data output.
Sorry, could you?
The thing that Gregory Jean-Baptiste did with me last summer was looked at the LAMPS Molecular Dynamics code, and then we looked at a finite element code. And between the two of them, between 30 and 60% of the data did not change between output steps. And because of that, the amount of data that you had to output in order to have everything that's changed is obviously radically smaller. And that could be a good motivation for saying we want to reduce the wear intensity on the non-volatile memory, so we're going to use this same technique that we could use for checkpointing, but also for the actual output. And then on top of that, have a way to be able to, when you access it, have it automatically say, kind of have a metadata tree of sorts that when you want to access something, it knows where it's actually stored, as opposed to just saying every file has all of the pieces in it. We know that that piece hasn't changed in four time step outputs. So we have to go back for to actually get the value on that.
Hmm.
And that's an interesting metadata problem.
Right, right.
Okay. Actually, I used that with Greg's work with you, the 2.3.1. So
right.
I wrote something underneath below UFP is still in the cache component, endurance.
I see. Okay.
So I tried to use, I think I borrowed some idea from Gregory's paper.
This is the deduplication work?
Deduplication. So in case the containers, right, in case the software PM containers cannot go beyond incremental checkpoint, then we can still apply deduplication on the batch layer after the container layer.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, so the incremental checkpoints make something more complicated. For instance, if you just want to write out every 10th checkpoint, that's not very easily possible with the incremental checkpoints, because you need to collect all the increments since the last 10, so that you have a consistent checkpoint after 10 checkpoints, or you complete,
but
checkpoint.
That's
another way to look at it. But I think it may not be better than having every 10th checkpoint if there are lots of changes happening across checkpoints.
See, I guess the checkpoint period should be determined based on the resilience requirement.
Right.
So based on that requirement, there has to be a sort of like a minimum checkpoint frequency.
Yeah.
And you cannot skip beyond that.
Yeah.
And the incremental checkpoint will allow us to, based on the minimum requirement, we can reduce its data volume.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I need to. Okay. This is useful. I need to think more about how to connect the dots here. And
okay. And another piece of information might be useful for you is that in the proposal we are talking about the targeting three different types of workloads. So we have the traditional monolithic simulation code. They run on themselves and they checkpoints directly. And then we have static workload, the protocols, and composite workloads. So we have the simulation codes coupled with the in-situ in-transit code. And the three we have, third one we have the big data analytics workload. We have general big data applications like file science type applications ready to load the large genome database, for example, and to process it. The kind of EOD data processing. There's a ton of data that come from the experiment that can be to reduce them and analyze them before they go to the file processing. So these are the three type of workloads we are talking about. So maybe you can use them.
This is what you wrote in 1.2, the beginning of 1.2.
I did mention that. Yeah, and second point of the 1.2, how about how we can support the web application.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Raju, there was a paper at HPDC 2 or 3 years ago that did something similar to what you're describing.
Okay.
And it's cited in the paper that Gregory did.
Is the L checkpoint paper? It has single metal checkpoint.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's either. I think it was 2012 HPDC.
Is it concurrent write sharing? No.
No, that doesn't sound right. Let me get this up here.
Interconnect agnostic checkpointing? No.
That's the budget. Where did I send that? Okay.
I'm trying to find it too. Okay. And by the way, I do look forward to Gregory's paper. It might be useful.
Okay.
What's that?
Do you send me an email?
No, I haven't sent you now.
Okay.
I haven't sent it to you.
Thanks. I haven't gotten it, but I'll get it eventually.
Where is it? Oh, it's in there. Okay. It is... Oh, it's the number 9 one, the AI checkpoint.
Yeah, AI checkpoint, yeah. But leverage memory...
Yeah.
AI checkpoint.
It's AI checkpoint by front compiler. I also sent you the graph paper.
Leveraging memory access patterns. That's the one?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
Yeah, but either way, the stuff can contain a lot more than just that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I haven't read,
yeah.
I haven't read this paper, but... Well, yeah. I mean, soft PM containers can be used for data output as well, like Jay was pointing out earlier.
Okay.
Could
oh,
be
yeah.
used for pretty much storing anything you want. It's a general purpose storage, persistent storage mechanism that is memory-based and can be... and it works incrementally and transactionally. So yeah, it's you know, certainly checkpointing is the obvious use case, but it can do other things.
Yeah, so please take a look at my red hat endurance. There's some overlap there. And,
okay, I got Gregory's paper as well. So well, thank you.
So I'm talking about my red hat on endurance.
Yeah, I'll certainly read that
yeah.
as well. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so there must be some overlap. There may be some overlap.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. Roger, do you have any other questions?
Not at the moment. If I have more questions, I'll send an email.
Okay.
As I read, I'll probably have more questions.
Sure. Yeah. And I dropped something for the project management and evaluation plan. I need to do more for evaluation plan. But wherever I see places that you can help me, I left the reminder there. So it's I think that's right. It's a reminder, and I start with the name of the person I think the people can.
Okay.
So those are small things you can pick up them later.
Yeah, sure. Sounds good. I think we can also fix those things after we've done the main writing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, I have plenty of time on my hand, so I'm just trying to finish the other prototypes. Once we have the main ideas fleshed out, your sections I can also move in and help you.
So Ming, one thing which you could potentially help me with is
yes.
is some figure for the caching related questions, and you could probably reuse. I mean, something more consistent with what you have in Figure 1 would probably be best. I don't know what tool. I could probably try to do it myself, but I don't know what tool you're using for Figure 1.
Yeah, I use this PowerPoint. Yeah.
PowerPoint.
My question is what we want to put in the figure. Should we include everything that we talk about in that section or just some portion of it?
Yeah, I mean, if we include everything, that would be ideal, but I'm guessing that would make the figure too complicated, right?
Right.
Yeah. Do we want to add some color to it? For that figure one, so that we can refer to that in pieces more easily.
Yeah.
So my intention is to put some labels, numbers in the figure, and provide some notes explaining how the pieces that the research characters we propose how they mesh, how where they are in this architecture.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't done that yet because we. At that moment, when we create the figure, I was not sure what are the exact tasks, research tasks we are proposing. So I guess I can do that now.
So Ming, could you add that PowerPoint slides as well to the repository so that if I want
okay.
to reuse some slide and make my own, then I could more easily?
Sure. And regarding the figure that you're talking about, you could have a rough idea how it should be. I can also have it created. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
I guess at this moment, the question is what we want to focus.
You're right. I don't have a clear sense for what is the best figure to create yet. So I'll let me think about it.
Okay. But like I suggested last time, I do think we need a figure for some
here. Yeah. We do absolutely. I think the challenge is the showing the incremental checkpoints and how they play out in physically situating in various layers of the cache hierarchy. I think that's the that's what I need to think more about.
Okay, that doesn't work for the consistency, okay?
Yeah.
If that's the most difficult part, then we can just focus on that.
Okay.
Right. Jay, do you have anything else to talk about?
Nope. I just need to get heads down and get writing.
Okay. Okay. So sounds good.
Yep.
I redo numbers and apologies again for significantly underestimate the budget. I do it again. Yeah. And I try to get in touch with Kevin.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. So if I guess the BBG are traveling next week, right? So we have to find different time for all of us to do.
I don't have an official schedule, but I know that it's an all-day meeting on Tuesday.
Right. So when will we be back? Wednesday or?
Wednesday night, but I have Wednesday morning open.
Wednesday morning? Okay, so maybe you can...
It's like an 11:30 flight or something Wednesday.
Okay. So maybe you can try, I don't know, 10 a.m. or 9:30 a.m.?
Yeah, I'll be on Pacific time, so...
That should work, Roger, that work for you, so 9:30 here, that we 12:30
Florida. Wait. That's next week, right?
Next week, yeah, Wednesday, yeah.
It should be fine.
Okay, good.
All right.
I thought it was Roger. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Bye.